Peace and blessings, love and service. I want to welcome you all and invite you all to Wise Words of Wisdom's Conversations with Manu Lewis. You know, I know it's been a while, but the end result is still to hear the babies laughing in the background and playing and enjoying life. You know, a lot of people, that's what we want. That's what we know the end would be when we're in healthier places as individuals, as families, in our communities, you know, even with dealing with these systems. You know, so today is Monday, it's like the 19th. Just want to do a brief check-in. And again, I want to acknowledge the fact that I'm not really consistent with these podcasts, and because when it seems like every time I set a schedule to these are the times I'm going to do it, seems like those are the times and all the things come up. But I know that I end up having to come back and share, you know, these wise words of wisdoms. And, you know, one thing that I realized back a while ago is that, you know, life is short. Life is fleeting. You know, for some, it don't even really last that long. So it is really important in what we do in the little time frame that we have. And I know for quite a while, especially on these podcasts, you know, I've really been talking about restoring values or restoring humanity and restoring peace. And, you know, it is a restorative focus, right? And as a practitioner of restorative methods, you know, this past week, I participated in a very deep and I think a very vital training in, when we talk about restoring peace, and the training was the Nonviolent Peace Force. It was a 5-day training all day. And being that the focus was on security specialists and in the schools, how do we keep our schools safe in these times without the use of force, right? Without guns, right? Because we know that, you know, even in our communities, there's a lot of guns. You know, a lot of people have a lot of guns. Even last week, one of my brothers from down in Georgia, who I went to school with, he's doing security down in Florida. He said, man, it's a shortage of ammo, which means that, you know, they're buying up all the ammo and running up the prices on the ammo. And, you know, if you got a whole bunch of ammo and just one gun, you can. But if you ain't, you know, you got a whole bunch of gun and very little ammo, you know, it makes a big difference. So, you know, he was telling me about, you know, some things, some underlying things that's going on that's not really being said. And, you know, in this time of even restoring our consciousness to our health, you know, what is it that we're restoring? Because everyone's trying to get back to maybe a normal that they seen some benefit in or they was comfortable with. But I think it's good to, you know, really stop in this time of 2020 of COVID-19 and, you know, the focus on health, not only your physical health, but your mental health and your spiritual health and also your financial health. But also we have this this focus from the murder of George Floyd, this focus on, you know, our community health and, you know, the health of these systems that are put in place that are supposed to protect individuals or protect property or return ownership or whatever the now purpose of, you know, the law enforcement, the police departments, criminal justice, criminal reform, all of that, whatever its main focus is. From my point of view, I always keep in mind that since mankind, since manhood started, and individuals, humanity started populating places and spaces, there's always been a need to, restore after a harm has been done, restore some type of value, or restore some type of justice, or restore some type of health. You know, even in financial situations where individuals was gaining, let's say, power or influence or materials, and something may have happened, there was a need to restore those individuals' property or, you know, what have you. It's always taking place, even in the justice system. The justice system is to restore something, right? Whether it's some type of material or material value or constitutional value. It is, you know, all the judges, they have been put in place. Even the police department is now in a place where they are put and strategically placed to restore peace, right? Or something of another. Right. Even with the health cares to restore health, the values that individuals want to see, how they want to live. These institutions have been put in place to restore something. And as I said a while ago on a couple of different podcasts ago, is that, you know, a lot of these systems actually replace something good being restored to some end objective being met, right? And that end objective may not to be have a restorative element to it, but that doesn't mean that it is not put in place for a reason. Let's say that, right? So going back to this training, which is about security specialists, unarmed security, nonviolent security presence. And it is the ideology and the methodology in which to deal with conflict, especially violent conflict, in certain ways that benefit the whole. So it is done in a fashion in which you really have to look at all the stakeholders that's in place, and especially when you talk about schools. It's not just the administration, because they do have a part to play. The teachers have a part to play. The parents have a part to play. Even, you know, the janitor has a part to play in, you know, children's safety in schools. And I have a lot of takeaways from the training. I have a lot of tools that I gained, not only from knowing how I've been implementing the restorative processes into the work that I look to do and I have been doing, but also taking a nonviolent mental approach to solving solutions that are just not individual basis, just not the kids. It is the community at large. It is the, you know, the clergy. It is the police department. It is the policymakers. It is the, even the people who don't have kids who live in our community, how we engage in our community and how we are inclusive or cooperative or, you know, how we really network with other people across lines is really important, right? So when we talk about safety, you know, how does that really look when we have a lot of gunshots and a lot of people being killed and, you know, a lot of different immediate needs not being met, so people act out, especially when you talk about mental health issues or the lack of mental health services or individuals actually taking advantage of them. So when I share in these podcasts the need to restore human values, the need to restore individuals' beliefs and faith that not only the belief that they are worth saving, but also they are a contributing factor to everything that goes on in our community, whether they vote or don't vote, whether they take the census or don't take the census, whether they're silent to what's going on or the boisterous. Individuals in the communities in which a lot of violent things are happening are looking for some right now immediate things that they can do right now to help alleviate some of the actions that's taking place in our community. And I understand that need. I feel it. I live right here on Broadway. Anytime there's some gunshots up here around Broadway and 26 or Lowry and up here in the high end of the alphabet, you know, being I'm a couple levels up, you know, I hear it, I see it, you know, and that the ambulance is often coming down Broadway. I'm always hearing that, and it's always like a triggering event for me, knowing that, you know, something happened to somebody and they're going to have to save somebody. And a lot of people aren't saved. A lot of people, you know, actually lose their lives in the street. So those are issues that we want to deal with immediately to stop those things. But I know that on a lot of different levels, a lot of things need to be addressed. Right. There is a financial side to why a lot of crime is happening. Lack of financial support or stability. A lot of individuals just aren't in good places because their finances aren't sustainable. Right. So in the time of COVID, where people have this social distancing regulation put on how they move, who they go around, you know, and how they actually engage with other people when they're in the community, you know, it's a new time, right? And I do think that in these new times that we really should take some new approaches to issues that really, really get compounded once there's other layers added to the onion, let's so to say, because if an individual has mental health issues and actually has family or social support, and in this time of COVID-19, that family social support isn't there, or as regular as it used to be, then you, out of that individual, you may have some fluctuations in, you know, their mental maintenance, right? And with those fluctuations, you know, let's say an individual, because a lot of places got burned down, couldn't get to their medication, so they couldn't, you know, actually take their medication or actually check in, you know, with people, have somebody come by. You know, we have issues, we have compounded mental health issues that go on. And, you know, some of these you know, young men and young women, not just young, but individuals who are struggling with their mental health issues, they may not have at this time those resources to deal with them or those outlets in which to engage, right? So even with that, some individuals do take the opportunity to, you know, find other means to self-medicate, right? And when you start looking at lenses of individuals needing to medicate and self-medicate or erroneously over-medicate, that has an effect. So we're still talking about individuals in our community. We're still talking about people, right? Whether they're male, female, whether they're young, old, whether they're white or non-white. We're still talking about individuals in our community and how these new times are bringing about, you know, new measures of people acting, engaging, being supportive or the lack thereof in our communities, right? So through the lens of a nonviolent peace force, I was challenged with it was a mental challenge on how do I incorporate this in how I engage in the community, right? Because oftentimes I talk about, creating a training or creating a element or creating the environment in which individuals can be inclusive in to participate or get the tools to operate better as individuals, as family members on their blocks, in their neighborhoods, in their communities, also how they show up in the workforce, right? Whether they're an employee or an employer, right? Whether they're entrepreneurs or business individuals just starting out on a business venture because they feel like that's the only way that they can actually, you know, live a full and healthy life is to live their dream or their passion. You know, it's dealing with humanity on the basic level of the things that we need, the things that we want to see, right? And knowing that there has been a standard that has been placed a little out of range for some people, and that's simply based on the color of our skin. That standard of whiteness or society being judged on the standard of whiteness or how whiteness is being treated differently from non-white individuals, even through legislation and policy and, you know, exposure, and even how we, you know, and I was looking on the news, even how we talk about different situations, the narrative that we create as individuals, you know, which is very important. And I think that that is one of the, those are some of the avenues in which we find ourselves if we're big in social media. You know, we can find a lot of places in social media where there's divisions, right? Where there's hate talk, right? Where there's the lack of transparency, right? And certain narratives are created and not even challenged, or they're seen as being outside the scope of being challenged, right? Which is a tragedy, right? Because that's how we got to the places that we are, with seeing all of the disparities from health in economics, in education, you know, and all the institutions that are supposed to be put in place to support our cultures, our way of living, who we are as individuals, you know, we see that they're kind of slightly tilted to an advantage of a certain people. So I think that even when we look at, you know, how to nonviolently engage in systems that create and manufacture violent mentalities or violent behaviors, right? And systems that actually, and then a lot of times, do just as much harm as the action itself, which initiated the system, right? Talking about corrections and all of that, right? So it's, you know, how do we engage as a society in reinvesting our time and our energy into being restored as human beings, into restoring our relationships, into restoring our families? How much time and energy can we put into restoring the values that we want to see in our community and reflecting those with our actions, with how we engage the next door neighbor, how we engage, you know, the person that lives across the street or down the street that we may not even know? How we engage, or how do we, what's the lack of engagement, right? I think that when we talk about, well, when the conversation is had about defunding or reforming the police, and, you know, last couple of years ago, we was talking about reforming the prison industry, and it was done real quick and swept up under the rug. Well, I think that a lot of focus was taken off of how many of the Fortune 500 companies signed off on prison reform and the First Step Act and these initiatives in which brought about a cultural change within systems that was seen and highlighted as to be broken, right? That they didn't work for everybody. A lot of people didn't benefit from them. Only certain people benefited, especially in the short term and in the long term. In a lot of these systems that address criminal acts, right? So it's how do we engage in even those systems, which are supported by and held up by individuals? Systems don't exist without individuals pushing them. Systems don't exist without individuals advocating for processes for those systems to be activated or for those systems to exist, right? People actually work in those systems. And it's the same people that, if they don't mind always having the advantage, or if they don't mind always being able to create a narrative that's comfortable for them, if they don't mind upholding and supporting an ideology which says that, well, certain people, it's okay for certain people not to get the full brunt of being accountable. It's okay for certain people not to be as accountable or as responsible for, even in the light of they should be, right? It's like certain parts of the system hold juveniles more accountable than adults. Matter of fact, more accountable than adults that's in authority over those same juveniles. That's a state of double consciousness, right? Which affects our entire society. when we have different standards for different people just based off the color of their skin, that is a state of double consciousness, right? When you have policies, laws, and legislation which gives certain individuals who may have a lot more financial stability, they have to pay into a system less than individuals who don't have as much income, who don't have as much financial stability, right? So it's that state of double consciousness that a lot of these laws and policies and legislations that support these systems, that they're interwoven with this double consciousness, right? So how do we get individuals to see that we all have a role to play? We all have a responsibility in. We all should be held accountable for what we do to either create violence or restore peace, right? And when we take the initiative to find peaceful solutions, right? Not only looking for peaceful solutions, but we also be peaceful in ourselves, right? There was a lot of focus put on Mahatma Gandhi in the training and how his whole mission was to create a peace movement, a nonviolent movement. But we know that that's not specific to in India, to Mahatma Gandhi, but also with, you know, with Marcus Garvey, right? And his ideology in even seeing a reason to go to, you know, the Ku Klux Klan to have a sit down and talk about, you know, what we have in common and what we can build on because we exist in the same, on the same land, right? Even with Malcolm X, you know, and his going to the UN and his going to, you know, having these conversations with who he deemed as an oppressive entity, but going to him for the sake of humanity and speaking up for humanity, right? And, you know, as a Black man, I want to talk about Black man issues, but we are also human beings, right? We have a particular role that we have played and roles that have been played on us in this society, and that is based on that ideology of a standard or an advantage being given to a particular people. But we know that that does not take away my humanity as a Black man just because of policies and laws that say, or that was put in place, you know, way before my conception. That does not take away my humanity, right? So when we invest in people's humanity, when we restore the values in individuals, and not only in them, but they are able to reflect those values without those values being suppressed, and we see that the values of humanity are a common factor that we could all agree upon, which sometimes and a lot of times, in especially in these times, we see that there's a lack of human values. There's a lack of reflection of those values. We see a lot of systems, right? We see a lot of systems being lubricated with ideology that supports those systems. And even in a lot of those systems, we can clearly see that they are broken, they create disparities, and they take away from the values of human beings and puts us in boxes to be checked off on a piece of paper, right? So that in itself is violent. That whole act of a lot of systems is violent when it is not conducive to, you know, the values of humanity. Maybe the values of a system. Systems are put in place at one point to restore values. this is the place that we need to get back to. These are the places that we know that we operate better from.